Hello. Welcome to Razor's Edge, local and independent current affairs straight from Sydney on 2SER 107.3. I'm Daniel Butler. Today on the show, an Indigenous technology and design company is using Indigenous knowledge systems to inform tech development, with country-centric design putting the environment first. Also on the show today, a new report out highlights some of the challenges facing Sydney's retailers, with the ever-present threat of online shopping and personalised deliveries chipping away at the market. The answer could be more financial support for our most needy. All that and more coming up on Razor's Edge. But first, Angie Abdillah is the CEO of Old Ways New, a company that draws upon Indigenous knowledge systems to inform placemaking, service design, and new technologies. We spoke in her Sydney offices recently about an upcoming project of Old Ways taking place at Barangaroo and about the approach to technology that respects country and elders.
So Barangaroo, the Big Sky project is a really amazing project because what we're doing is we're bringing together the local community and various different clans and nations that span the Whale Songline, which traverses from my country in Tasmania all the way up the east coast of the continent, but also beyond. It's a universal story. Like, there's different mobs in different parts of the world that have whale dreaming. The other really important through line to this project is the Seven Sisters, and so that's a star story that's also known across the entire continent of this place, but also it's a universal story. And so these two through lines are important, but essentially what the work is going to do is, is it going to be a physical space that invites people in to explore the interrelationship and interconnection of all things through Indigenous sky mapping? So when we talk about sky mapping, Indigenous sky maps are the stars and the constellations in the sky, which are often mirror images of the songlines, significant points along those songlines. And there's a really deep, sophisticated body of knowledge that exists within the sky. It's where our lore comes from, and so what we're looking at is that the star stories, two particular epic star stories that relate to this place, the creation story. So it's the emu kangaroo and the snake crocodile, or otherwise known as the serpent. And these two big creation stories are represent both the winter and the summer skies. And what you'll experience as a visitor in this site is a large dome, a very large, large dome that will be accompanied by a second element, which is a yarning circle and a fire pit. And the third element is a large rock engraving. The rock engraving represents the sea. The yarning circle and the fire pit represents land, and the dome represents sky. And through all of these three different sites that are one site, three different elements of one site, you'll start to understand the interrelationship and interconnection of these different knowledges and different ways of seeing country and experiencing country through sea, land, sky. Country is all those things. It's not just earth or nation or status. It's land, sea, or land and waterways and sky, and all of the knowledges that exist within. And so the site itself is embedded with some really interesting technologies. Within the dome, we're using LED lights, thousands of LED lights, to represent the different phases of these two epic creation stories, so the emu and kangaroo and the snake and the crocodile. There's also another element that will be reflected within the programming of these LED lights that you'll see moving as they represent different seasons and cycles and time, essentially, time and navigation. And so there's a few other different big star stories that will be embedded within this dome, and then you'll hear through a variety of different channels various different modes of these big stories. So through bone conducting technologies, through we're exploring speakers embedded within the earth for the vibrational visceral experience, and a variety of other different types of technologies that facilitate that immersive and experiential way of being able to connect to country through these big stories. There's all sorts of different kind of ways that we approach technology, but it's always through this methodology we call country-centered design, which is a process that we've developed over a number of years that takes the human out of the equation, or takes the human out of the center. So instead of human-centered design, which is, I think, quite problematic, in that humans are the reasons why we're in the Earth's in a pretty disastrous state right now because of the, the result of the Enlightenment Project puts humans and the individual in particular at the center of all things. Whereas from an Indigenous perspective, we always put country first. It's the needs of country and the care for country first that then enables communities to prosper. So if you look at country that's unhealthy, it's usually the communities are often unhealthy too. If you look at country that's been really well cared for and nurtured, communities are often really healthy as well. So as our elders always say, if you look after country, country will look after you, or caring for country, caring for kin comes from this principle. So country-centered design is a process which we apply to all things. So first of all, we're really mindful of it becoming formulaic, and so it's really a loose set of, well, a very particular set of principles that we apply to a variety of different contexts. And so that always starts with knowing whose country you're on, building relationships with traditional custodians and local elders and community, and then working with those custodians and elders. And when I say working with, I mean actually paying people as specialist knowledge holders to define what the problem is and then create the solution together through understanding what the traditional knowledges of that country are, and developing up a rich tapestry of those knowledges from a range of different perspectives, and then developing out the design solution, which does typically bring in a range of different modalities. We use futuring techniques. We use human-centered design. We've got a very particular approach to doing that. We apply, you know, qualitative and quantitative research methodologies. We apply a range of different types of modalities to the designing out of complex problems, and then only then, in the prototyping of such a solution, we work out what the appropriate technology is. Mm. Never ever technology first. Always culture, country first, and culture and research strategy, then technology.
Angie Abdillah ending that report.
The Japanese Film Festival returns with the best in new Japanese cinema. Become housemates with Jesus and Buddha in St. Young Men's Second Century, or discover Okinawan rituals in Born, Bone, Born. No matter the film, you're sure to gain a new perspective on Japanese cinema. Screening November 14th to 24th at Event Cinemas George Street. See the full program at JapaneseFilmFestival.net. Sponsors of 2SER.
I'm Daniel Butler, and you are listening to Razor's Edge on 2SER 107.3. Well, retailers in Sydney are finding it harder to survive in the market as online shopping is taking a bigger share. Today, the Commonwealth Bank released a report for retailers to highlight some of their biggest challenges. While some are calling for longer trading hours, the Australian Council of Social Services believes that the best way to boost consumer confidence is to inject more money into social services. Luis Rivera has more.
For some, going to the shops, it's a good way to relax or perhaps socialise. But many of us are spending less at the shops, as more people are choosing to do their shopping online. I spoke to Jerry Macy, National Manager at Commonwealth Bank, about their latest report on the retail industry.
So this report, which is provided by CommBank for the retail community, it's available on our website for free, aims to provide some research and thought into the last mile delivery of goods primarily bought online, and aims to give insight, I suppose, to help retailers to improve on that last mile delivery option that they provide.
Jerry also outlined some of the main challenges that the retail industry is facing against online shopping.
What we found was that retailers tend to be focused on speed. You'll know from your own experience that when you buy something online, you are offered standard delivery or express delivery, perhaps even faster, 1 hour delivery. Now, that isn't necessarily what consumers are looking for or value. We found, in fact, that cost and control were valued more than speed of delivery. Cost, obviously, the cheaper, the better. But when it comes to control, consumers are looking for the ability to follow their delivery as it's traveling through the process. They're looking for good customer service, like being able to phone up and find out where that delivery happens to be, even wanting to be able to change the delivery whilst en route. And that's not always offered by retailers.
Apart from the challenge to provide more efficient delivery systems, senior economist from Westpac, Matthew Hassan, believes that retailers have to be aware of other challenges.
Rather than any specific issues around online delivery, I think there's a general theme about increased competitive pressure in the space that's compounding some of the slow growth problems that retailers have encountered. And areas like department stores, for example, have been going through multiple years of slow growth due to some of the changes in consumer spending patterns and the format for retail. In other areas like clothing, for example, there's probably more pressure coming from online sales from abroad. And I suspect there's also a generational change going on in that segment as well. We've seen a large number of retail clothing brands close over the last couple of years.
The task to boost the retail sector is on the quest. Catherine O'Regan, Executive Director at Sydney Business Chamber, believes that some things can be done to boost the retail market.
Retailers right now are experiencing really challenging times, so it's appropriate that we start to think a little bit differently. We start to think about the city as a place where you can shop far later than it is now. We need to be a city that's open for business so that you can shop after hours, after work, and at times that's not just necessarily during the day or during your lunch hour. Sydney is a global city, but New York, as a global city, also provides nighttime trading for shopping. And that's an important lesson that we can too learn from that city, to trade at any time in New York and to actually have great shopping experience no matter what time it is something that we can definitely learn from for Sydney.
As mentioned before, another challenge that retailers are facing is our slow economic growth. Dr. Peter Davidson from the ACSS believes that the government should inject money into social services to boost our economy.
There are alternatives. One is to increase incomes of people who will spend the money right away where it's needed in the parts of the country where unemployment is highest. And I'm talking about increasing the New Start allowance by $75 a week, as we've been arguing for some time now. It would cost around $3.3 billion a year, and virtually all of that would be spent in shops wherever unemployment is high, and so it's going to give a boost where it's most needed.
Dr. Peter Davidson ending that report by Luis Ribera.
Poetic, moving and immersive, Their Sea is Always Hungry is a new solo exhibition by Australian Balinese artist Layla Stevens at UTS Gallery. The exhibition explores Bali's hidden histories, tracing the present-day impact of Indonesia's 1965 anti-communist massacres and the rise of Bali as an island paradise in the popular imagination. Head to art.uts.edu.au for more information. UTS Art, where creativity and technology meet, sponsors 2SER.
I'm Daniel Butler and you are listening to Razor's Edge, coming to you live from this place known as Sydney, on Gadigal land of the Eora Nation. The release of the design plans for the $5.3 billion Western Sydney Airport terminal last week has given the public an indication of what to expect ahead of its opening in 2026. The plans are described by the government as a once-in-a-generation infrastructure project coming to life. The construction of the airport has been underway since last year, with the building of the runways, roads and rail expected to start next year. The flight design paths, however, will stay hidden from the public until 2021. Talia Kreft has this report.
The airport situated at Badgerys Creek, 50 kilometres west of Sydney CBD, on completion will handle up to 10 million passengers annually. It is scheduled to undergo modular expansion, and by early 2060 it is expected to operate at its capacity of 80 million passengers. The airport has claimed to be the start of a process of economic transformation of Western Sydney. Estimates by the federal government, who is funding the project, has said it will deliver 28,000 direct and indirect jobs within 5 years of opening. These jobs will range from construction to manufacturing and retail. The state and federal government have been actively encouraging companies to invest in the area near the new airport to create an aerotropolis. The North-South Rail Link, funded by the joint state and federal government, will start in 2021 and will connect travellers from the airport with St Mary's and the entire Sydney Rail network. Sydney's Kingston Smith Airport, which rejected an earlier deal to build the second airport, has responded by saying that competition will not be a threat as it aims to be the premium airport. It says the second airport will be attractive to low-cost airlines due to its lower costs of being further from the city, and that it will work alongside the government to guarantee that the Sydney area gains from both airports. The next stage of the development at the site of the airport will begin next year, with 23 million cubic metres of earth being moved. What will the Badgerys Creek Airport mean for jobs in the surrounding area?
Well, the job promises that have been made have varied and changed with the seasons. There's no guarantee that any of these jobs will actually come from Western Sydney. Our view is that the jobs numbers will be far more modest than is predicted and will not outweigh the environmental and social damage that will be done by this development.
What impact do you expect the airport to have on public transport networks in Western Sydney and broader Sydney?
Well, the governments at both levels are not making appropriate commitments to rail. So I believe that what you will see is increased road traffic, increased air pollution and decreased amenity for residential areas in and around the airport.
Have residents of the local area been kept informed about the development plans for the airport?
What they are doing is they're talking about everything but what matters. They have refused to release the flight paths. So we're building an airport, but no one knows where the planes are going to fly. It's kind of like that episode from Yes Minister, the most efficient hospital in England was a hospital with no patients. Well, this is the airport with no flight paths. Residents want to know where the planes will fly, who will be affected, whose quality of life will be diminished. There are no flight paths that have been released, and the government isn't going to release them soon. So they're racing to construct this thing, but not telling anyone who's going to be impacted and by how much.
What social and environmental impacts are you concerned about with the airport going ahead?
Increased noise, impact the World Heritage Area, impacts to air pollution, impact to road pollution, the potential loss of World Heritage listing in the Blue Mountains, the potential impacts on Warragamba Dam. We believe the impacts on the community of Blue Mountains will be significant. We believe the impact on the World Heritage Area will be significant, and we believe it puts our UNESCO World Heritage listing at risk.
How could the flight route plans for the airport affect local residents?
Well, because the planes will be flying over people. You're talking about a densely populated area. You're talking about several million people living out there. You're talking not about an airport with a curfew, which is what Sydney gets, but you're talking about an airport with no curfew. There is no plan for double glazing, no plan for noise attenuation, only aeroplanes 24/7, 365 days a year, flying over communities of Western Sydney with no respite, including a World Heritage Area, the Blue Mountains, that attracts 5 million tourists a year.
What stage are they up to with developing the site of the airport?
Oh, well, look, they're in the early stages. And they're racing to get it built as quickly as they can before they have to reveal the full horror story of the flight paths, because they know when they do, as has happened before, the community will rise up and say no, and what they're hoping is that it'll all be too late.
How will the building of this airport affect Sydney's Kingston Smith Airport, and do you think there's a demand for this new airport?
No, look, I don't. I think that this, and obviously the market doesn't either. When the government looked for private sector partners to build the airport, no one was interested. I think the government's trying to do is to shift the noise burden out west, but not give Western Sydney residents the same protections that inner city residents get. No curfew, no noise attenuation. They won't even tell us where the flight paths are going to be.
Mayor of the Blue Mountains, Mark Greenhill, speaking there with Talia Kreft. Well, that's all we have time for tonight. Thanks for listening to Razor's Edge on 2SER 107.3. Razor's Edge is produced on Gadigal land of the Eora Nation, but you won't catch us next week. This is our last episode for the year. Thanks for listening this year, and we'll see you again in 2020 for more news and current affairs straight out of Sydney. I'm Daniel Butler. Till then.
Body of love, don't know it's me. That's not. course, I guess. But there's innocence in existence, and it's no small price to wait your whole life until you know. If I could love you better, if we could see what we'd be.
Yeah.